Welcome to The Golfing Mind, the podcast which looks at the game of golf in general, but specifically our major interest is in the mental side of the game of golf. Now, if you're a regular listener, you'll know that I often say that, you know, the mental side of the game of golf is very, very important, and it's probably the one area where the average golfer can see the greatest short-term improvement in their play and enjoyment. But I also say, if you listen very regularly, that for the majority of people that play golf, the mental side of the game is just assumed to be an aspect that you either have an ability towards or you don't. Now, obviously, I would say that everyone has the ability to improve their mental game. And if people are genuinely serious, you can actually train your mind. And I have been looking at this for over 20 years, and I've worked with elite performers in many different disciplines, and the one thing that they agree with is that the ability to focus, visualize, stay calm under pressure is going to have a knock-on effect to how you perform physically, especially when you're sort of in a tense situation. But I also think that one of the things that most golfers do is they don't take their golf seriously enough. Now, if you're just a fun golfer, please ignore that comment. But I think the better you play your golf, the more fun you have. If you go out with a group of friends for a social day of golf and you play really bad golf, the meal might be nice and the weather might be good and the company might be excellent, but you'll leave the day going, oh, I wish I'd played better. But if you go and you play great golf in any situation, it's going to be a good day. So why do I sort of draw this sort of assumption that the average golfer doesn't take their game seriously enough? Well, it's because working with professional golfers, you see the difference. It's a bit like going to someone's house who tells you they're a keen cook and they can produce restaurant quality meals. And then you go and you see inside a professional kitchen and you think, now, there's a huge difference. So today, the podcast is quite simply called, 10 things the pros do that you probably don't. And it's not to be critical of you, but it's to give you a couple of thoughts and insights on things you could be doing. And none of them are too erroneous. And curiously, none of them have got anything to do with the mental game, because I've written about this extensively. And if you listen to the previous podcasts, I've shared a great deal of knowledge and information, and I've given some tips as to what you can do. The other thing I should say is that Seeger Golf has a 13-week online program which has been unbelievably successful. And to put it in context, no one who's done the program has ever come back to me and said their golf hasn't got better. I mean, there's a 100% success rate with the program. And for golfers who've said to me they haven't seen a huge difference in their performance, they said they have had a huge improvement in their enjoyment. So they no longer get thwarted and bothered by bad shots. And that, I must qualify, that's about one or two people who've said that. And they are very sort of occasional golfers, as opposed to people that play to a good handicap. And if you're listening to the show and you identify as one of those two people, you know that's meant in a very well-intentioned way, because golf is a game and games we play for fun. So let's look at the 10 things that professional golfers that you probably aren't doing. In no particular order, but number one would always be number one. So this is the number one thing. It is practice with purpose. When a professional goes down to the range, you will see them first loosen up and warm up, often doing some calisthenics, stretching their back, stretching their hamstrings, twisting, limbering up, swinging a leg back and forth, whatever it takes. But they're getting ready to practice. Once they actually get to the to their clubs, they will have a very specific routine of how they're going to play. They'll start with a wedge, and they will pick a target. They never hit a loose ball. They never just step up and hit two balls quickly back to back. Every shot is given 100% of attention. Now, why is this important? The reason it's important is what we practice is what we do. And if we're going to practice giving our full attention to every shot on the range, you can be darn sure you're going to do the exact same thing on the course. So number one, the next time you go to practice, practice with purpose. So don't say, I'm going to hit 100 balls. Say, I'm going to hit 27 irons. And I'm going to try and see if I can fade it slightly. I'm going to try and hit a fade. In the same way that a lot of the professional golfers will have drills they go through, bits of training equipment they might wear on their sleeve. They might tuck a bit of fabric under their right arm to make sure it stays in place throughout the swing so they know their arms are staying connected. But number one, practice with purpose. Number two, professional golfers have a pre-shot routine which they follow over every shot. And most amateur golfers that I know don't have a pre-shot routine other than, what's the distance? I think it's a 7-iron. I think it's a 5-iron. What's the distance? That's all the average. They might take a swing, but I know quite a few golfers who, once they get the club out, will walk up and just hit the ball. And they'll say they play better when they just hit the ball. And I'm not, I play golf for fun with these people, so I'm not going to argue. I'm not getting onto a national debate about this. But a pre-shot routine has so many benefits. I think the first thing is, if you have confidence in your pre-shot routine, you know when you step over the ball, you're going to be in the best possible space to hit your best possible shot. So it's not like you're rushing up, you've not had time. It means that you are going through a sequence. I was told there was a golfer, I think it was Sorensen, who they said from the time she got to her ball to the time she struck the ball, it was 22 seconds. So she went through the exact same routine every time. And if you watch professional golfers on the tour, you'll see exactly the same thing. Number three, professional golfers, if they're playing badly, will have a go-to shot. So it's a swing where they know they're going to hit a fade or a draw, but it's a go-to shot. So when you suddenly lose your rhythm, you lose your tempo, you lose your feeling for your swing, and it happens to all of us, they have a go-to shot. Because how often have you stood on a tee box and you've said to yourself or to your partner, I have no idea where this is going. Your golf club feels like a shovel. You have no feel, you've no rhythm, you've no tempo, and you just want to go home and cry. And you can't do that. So therefore, you need to have a shot that you know, even in the worst of days, if you hit this shot. Now for me, if I'm having a really bad day, I can aim to the left and I hit everything, and with a high follow through, I'm pretty certain the ball is going to go left to right. That's my go-to shot. It works for the woods, maybe not so well quite with the irons, but still, that's my go-to shot. Professionals know what their go-to shot is. Do you? Number four, they work on their short game a lot more than their long game. So if you go to the range and watch professionals, they're hitting a ton of wedges. They're hitting a ton of 52, 56, 60 degree wedges. They'll spend time in the short game area. They'll spend a ton of time in the bunker, hitting the high flop shot, hitting their low runner, because they know as professional golfers that 60% of the shots in golf are played from within 60 yards of the pin. So if that many shots are being played, they're the scoring shots. Now, you go to the average public driving range and what will you see? Well, you'll see someone start with a 9-iron, two shots, then onto their 6, three shots, then get their 3-wood out, two shots, and then out comes the driver and they blast the next 93 balls, looking at the monitor to see if they can get it over 300 yards. Now, as they always say, you don't win competitions off the tee, you can lose them off the tee. You win them from 50 yards in. And I don't know, I really can't think of any professional golfer or even a scratch golfer who hasn't got a very, very good short game. Now, I know some people often say of Victor Hovland, he didn't have a good short game, but trust me, when his short game wasn't good, he was still playing to a handicap of plus five. Once he got it good, he's gone to plus seven or plus eight, which is why in the Ryder Cup particularly, his short game was just extraordinary. But I've seen videos of him hitting duffs and dunches, but he put in the practice. So you practice, please spend more time on your short game than you do in the long game. Number five, give 100% attention to every shot. Every time a professional gets the ball, they almost switch off to what's going on in the world and their full attention becomes the lie, the stance, the distance, the wind, the humidity, the flag position, the shape of shot required. It's 100% of their attention goes to the shot they're about to play. I remember a fellow telling me he was playing in a sort of, I think it was a pro-am, and this is years and years and years ago, and he was playing with Gary Player. And he told the story that, you know, Gary was very interested in him. So where are you from? What do you do? Tell me about your back. You know, he was a very good companion. Because I know in some of the pro-ams, the professionals hate them. It's a day out of their life where the sponsors have to be, you know, given what they're paying for by being the tournament sponsors. And I know people that played with a professional that didn't speak to them, apart from saying hello on the first tee and thanks to the game on the 18th. But he said Player was different. He said Player was very chatty. He said except when he got within 5 yards of his ball, he just stopped talking. And the next thing, the bag went down and he went into this pre-shot routine. And he said it was just extraordinary. And I remember personally many, many years ago, and I know I've mentioned this before, when they were playing the early Dunhill back in the 1980s or whenever it was in St. Andrews. And I got to St. Andrews one evening, I think it was a Tuesday evening, before the tournament began. And it was misty on the golf course. And it was about 7 or 7.30 in the evening. And it was about half an hour before dark. And it was, I want to say it was foggy, but you couldn't see more than 50 yards. And I walked out in the old course seeing if I could find someone. And suddenly I saw a golf bag. And I thought, oh, must be a player. And as I got closer, it was Seve Ballesteros. And I was absolutely thinking, oh, wow. And it was just me and Seve and his caddy. And I kind of walked up and they saw me come up. So they turned around to look at me. And I said, would it be, is it okay to watch? And Seve just nodded and said, yes. But he put his finger to his lips as in to indicate, shh, but don't say anything. Which I think he missed the opportunity to have me analyse his swing and probably give him a few tips. And, you know, he might have won a few more majors. But we'll never know, will we? But I guess we probably can guess. So anyway, I remember it was he was playing Slazenger Golf Clubs at the time. And he had the caddy with whom he won the 1984 Open Championship at St. Andrews. So it must have been around that time. And he had an iron. It was about 100, I don't know what it was, 160 yards. And for some reason, I'm pretty sure it was a 7-iron because I was 5 yards away. And he got a ball and you could just see in the distance where the green was, but you couldn't really see the flag. And he stepped over it, and I promise you, for 4 seconds, nothing happened. And then he hits the ball, the most beautiful strike, and it just goes rifle straight. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what would I give to hit a ball like that? And he looked at it, and then he just put his hand out, his left hand out, and the caddy put another ball in his hand, and he dropped it at his feet. And he goes back into this 4 seconds, 5 seconds, total concentration over the ball. And he hit it, and this time he faded it in. Just, and he did it again. Got another ball, he hit it in with a slight draw. And then we all walked up to the green, and there were the balls, you know, near the centre of the green. And then after that, they walked off, and I walked off. But it was just so interesting to think, it's a practice couple of holes. He's on his own, there's no gallery, there's no spectators, apart from me. And yet, over each of those three shots, he gave it the full attention as though it was the final shot to the final green in the Open Championship. We don't do that. So, number five, give 100% attention to every shot. Number six, professionals, watch them. they practice the swing before they take the shot. When they get up to the ball, they don't grab the club and go, grr. They will take 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 practice swings. They're going to try and feel the shot they want to play, be it a fade, a draw, a stinger, a spinner, whatever. They're going to stand there and they're going to practice precisely the swing they need to make over the ball. The average golfer might take 1 or 2 swings, but that's to loosen up. They're not trying to recreate in their mind the shape they're trying to put on the ball. So number 6, practice your swing, or professionals will practice a swing before they play. Number 7, they take minimum an hour a day, from my experience, some more and some much more, and there's a few that do less, I'll admit that, dedicated practice on the putting green. The most important thing in the putting green is that your club face is square and it's coming down the intended line of the putt. And more putts are missed due to misalignment than misreading. So you will often see them with mirrors. There's specific brands that make mirrors. So they can look down and see that their eyes are right over the ball. They can look down and see that the club head is completely square because the mirrors have lines on them. Very thin lines that they can look and make sure the club head is parallel with one of the lines. I've said so many times, it's the one area of when golfers ever say, what's the best way to improve in their handicap? I say to them, just go to the practice ground and putt for 20 minutes every day. And in the wintertime, putt in your house every day. And I know people who brought their handicap down by 3 and 4 shots over the winter when they weren't on the course, just by every day practicing 6-foot putts on a practice putting mat. Just getting a stroke. And the more putts you make, the greater your confidence. And putting, of all aspects of golf, I think, needs to be supported by a foundation of great confidence. Number 8. Now, this is one you may find interesting. Now, you may have a reason for this, but professional golfers of any tour or any, even your club professional, they keep their clubs in pristine condition. They check the grooves after the club is wiped down. The grooves are cleaned out after every shot. It is important that you do that. Whereas I have got pals of mine who, when they turn up on the summer golf tour, there is mud encrusted that is weeks old. And when you offer to, say, give their clubs a wire brush, they go, no, they're fine. You've got to look, you wouldn't want the surgeon to operate on you with a sort of rusty blade, and you wouldn't want your taxi driver to pick you up in a car that's not had the engine well looked after. And you certainly wouldn't want to get in a plane where they haven't bothered with the safety checks because it worked last time. You know, you owe it yourself to give yourself the very, very best possibility of playing the very, very best shot you can. And you, if you're not keeping your clubs in the best condition they can be in, you've already giving yourself a disadvantage. So keeping your in good condition. And I even, you know, recently I've started, which you might find bizarre, but I've started to look after my putter. Now, your putter never gets mud on it, but I've now started wiping it down occasionally. And recently I just had it polished up, and the shine that came to it. And does it help? Well, it made me feel that the putter's in great shape. So I'll have to report on that later. Number 9. Now, I think this might have more to do with professionals doing this for a living. But most professional golfers I know will use a brand new ball for one round, and then they'll use another brand new ball. They will almost certainly use a new glove on every competitive round of golf. And practice rounds, I'm sure they probably don't. I've never asked them, so I don't know. But they change their gloves and balls between every round. Now, I was playing the other day and I picked up a ball out of my bag, and it was an old Titleist. Now, if Titleists are listening to this, please don't think, ooh, we've got to send Robin 144 Pro VXs. 72 will be fine. But I picked up an old Pro-V, and it must have been 3 or 4 years old. It had lost, there was no shine on it, and it was slightly discoloured. In fact, it's very probable I found it, and it's very probable an ex-lake ball, for all I know, with the lower Anyway, the point of that is it wasn't in great shape, the ball. And if you hit a ball enough, it's never going to return to perfectly round. And the reason professionals don't play with the same ball four rounds of the tournament is because they know if you hit it hard enough and long enough, it's going to develop a very fractional sort of change from being perfectly spherical. And even brand new balls under enough magnification will not be perfectly spherical. But if you assume that the discrepancies in the spherical nature of the ball are equally distributed amongst the field, it all kind of balances out. And the final thing, number 10, is professional golfers never go onto the course to play golf without thoroughly warming up. They don't suddenly find themselves running to the first tee. I mean, it's happened because they're running late, and they certainly might get away with it. But if they're going to try and compete in a tournament and play their best golf and win, they're going to go to the range and work their way through the bag. They're going to go to the short game area, hit some bunker shots. They're going to go to the putting green before they go to the tee. They're going to loosen up. Some of them have massage. I mean, they can afford it. It's their job. Of course, that's not us. But they thoroughly warm up. And I played on Monday. I was a bit late to the course, and I was straight up and onto the first tee as I did as a student. The difference was I didn't have the flexibility and athleticism I had 40 years ago. So the first six holes were, you know, a challenge, let me say. So that's it. So they're my 10 things professionals do. And just in case you're thinking, what are they again? Let me go through them. Number one, they practice with purpose. Number two, have a pre-shot routine that you trust and use every time. Number three, have a go-to shot if your game is letting you down. Number four, they work more on their short game than they do on their long game. Number five, they give 100% attention to every shot they hit. Number six, they practice the swing before the shot. So before they play the shot, they'll take 2, 3, 4 practice swings, visualizing and muscle memory the shot they're going to play. Number seven, dedicated practice in the putting green. They spend a lot of time practicing their putting, using aids and drills, and especially the 4-foot putts. Number eight, they keep their equipment pristine. Their clubs might be, now they have a new set every year, and some of us have clubs that are 4, 5, 6 and a lot older. Look after the club, polish them, wash them in warm soapy water. Make sure your club face is spotless for every shot. Number nine, they change their glove and the ball after every round. And sometimes they'll change the glove. I heard that Langer used to change his glove. 3 new gloves per every 6 holes, brand new glove. And, boy, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? And number 10, never play any round without warming up properly, getting nice and loose. So your tee shot on the first has the same easy feel about it as your tee shot in the 18th will if you didn't warm up. And that's it. So there were 10 things, and if you were to just do one of them, I'm sure it's going to help. But if you do 2 of them, it'll help more. And I won't labour on until I say, and if you do all 10 of them, but you got the idea. I'm passionate about the mental game of golf, and I'm also incredibly keen to encourage people to do my 13-week programme. There's a link on the podcast, as there always is. It's seagergolf.com. And if you have any questions or you're curious about it, drop me a note. There's a form on the website, and I'll be happy to help you. We've had a few people sign up this week, as we do every week, and I would be delighted to welcome you wherever you may be in the world. And because it's coming up to the winter months here in Europe and North America, I think this is the most perfect time to master your mind. So there you go. There's the hard sell. But as always, until we meet again, wherever you are in the world, play good golf. I had hoped this week to have a special guest, a major winner, and that's still in the pipeline. So hopefully before Christmas, but it's always a little bit of a balancing act juggling schedules. Well, not my schedule, their schedule, but there you have it. All the best. Take care wherever you may be.